Hi, good morning, everyone. So thank you for all the questions. We do have quite a few now. So just apologies in advance if we don't get to ask yours. And also, just for the interest of time, I'm trying to group them as much as possible. So we can invite Phil up again. A big thank you for just preaching to us so passionately and faithfully over this weekend.
Should I get another mic? Is there another
mic? Yeah, that might be helpful, actually. All right, so the first question is that in Philippians chapter 2, verse 2, when it says like-minded, same love, one spirit, are they three distinct things or are they part of the same?
Yeah, I think it's hard to... Is that on? Hello? Is that what...
I use this one.
Yeah, okay. They're slightly different, but I think what Paul often does, he sort of lays up different words with similar meanings, not to make separate points, but just for emphasis. As far as I can see in that verse, they're not identical, one mind, one spirit, one love, but it's building up just the oneness in every aspect of who we are, what we think, what we drive for, our purpose. So it's just the way we would use different words to repeat and make emphasis on one point. So that's how I would see that, rather than try and pull them apart and identify what each one means individually.
Okay, the next question, and this is something that our study groups struggle with a little bit as well. Sometimes things are generally grumble-worthy. I love how they started phrasing it. In that case, is grumbling okay? It's like looking for permission. But anyway, is that ever the case? And what is some of your advice on how to do so?
Well, the verse actually says, do everything without grumbling. So I don't think it leaves us any excuses or exceptions. There are things that are definitely not okay. Of course, there are things that are not okay. There are terrible things going on, but it's the question of how we respond to it. And I think grumbling, as we've defined it, is a response that actually is not productive. It's born out of frustration. It's born out of annoyance or anger. And it's, as I said, it's a passive-aggressive response. It's not even at least getting out there and trying to fix it. It's just behind, because we're too scared maybe, we just complain about it. And often grumbling is just grumbling to ourselves even, right? There are alternative ways to respond to grumble-worthy situations, whether it's getting out and dealing with it, confronting the person or speaking to them face-to-face, or even more importantly, bringing it before God and letting him know our concern and asking for help in prayer, either to fix it or to deal with it, and accept the situation. So I think the definition of grumbling means there's no excuse for grumbling, even though there are grumble-worthy, situations. So it's how we respond to it, yeah.
So this one's quite persistent. Is there a place for righteous anger?
Yes. Where is that? Yeah. I think definitely, in Ephesians it says, in your anger do not sin. So it implies that, God gets angry, Jesus gets angry. It implies that we also can be angry. And I think this is taking us out of Philippians, but in Ephesians what it does is it basically tells us that make sure that when we are angry, because we will get angry at things that are wrong, that we don't let our anger lead us into sin. And so I'd see... the context of that verse is basically the take off, take on. Stop doing this, start doing that. And I think it's stop being, how would I say, get rid of unrighteous wrath or anger and act in a godly way when you are angry, which means dealing with it quickly, which means watching how you respond so that your response isn't a sinful response and so on. So anger is more of an emotional response to a situation that's not good. And we often can't control that. And so it's not how you feel, but how you then deal with those feelings. That's what discerns whether it's righteous or unrighteous.
Okay, the next one. How do you deal with disunity out of pure godly motives? Example, if one party wants to focus on global mission and the other party wants to focus on local mission.
Yeah, if it's something at that level, it's not a gospel device, divide the church sort of issue, because you're still godly, you're still both wanting to do good things. I mean, there's no easy answers here. It's about taking time to be praying, to discerning God's will. It involves all parties being willing to to listen and pray and accept what God is saying. I think in ministry, in organizational leadership, we often have different opinions about what we should do. I think a lot of it is not just leaping forward with what we want to do, but as a group, taking time to slow down, to listen to one another, to pray with one another. And if in the end a decision is made that you're not happy with, being willing to let go of your opinion for the sake of unity. And I think that's one of the key issues. We can disagree with people while still letting them have out their way if it's not an ungodly issue. We can still think, well, I think my opinion is better, but for the sake of harmony and unity, I'm not going to fight for it. And so I think that's an important principle. Sometimes we think that if I'm right, I've got to fight to the bitter end. But there are some battles that are not worth having because it's more important that we're united in love that rather than my every so-called right opinion is, you know, imposed on other people. So that's a very difficult situation. It's not a simple solution, but there's some ideas anyway.
And on that note, how do you navigate disunity in strong differences about non-salvation issues? Should this stop believers from attending church together, altogether?
Yeah, we tend to do that because we have options, right? There are plenty of churches you can go to. If CCC is not doing what you want, you can go somewhere else easily. But in the New Testament, we don't see that. There's no options. You know, the church is the church. And I think even though we have in our context options, we shouldn't be looking at those options for non-gospel, non-salvation issues. I think it can be difficult. And again, it's that willingness to accept differences amongst one another and willingness to let go of our opinions sometimes. And also being careful not to impose our opinions on other people, being aware of their scruples. We had some conversation recently with some of the leaders about some issues they're talking about. And I think Romans 14 and 15 are really helpful there, where we see differences of opinion about what you can eat and about special days and how the different parties should respond to one another. So I think there are godly ways of giving way without having to force everyone to conform to exactly the same opinion. I think sometimes we get so stuck on being right and wrong, we forget that not every topic, every issue is worth dividing over.
Thanks for that. Now, next question. We have heard that joy comes from serving one another. How would you encourage a church leader that has become jaded and cynical towards serving?
Joy comes from serving one another, but the serving one another grows out of the joy in the Lord first. So it's our joy in the Lord and our experience of knowing Christ that leads us to want to serve and help others know him as well. And so the starting point is not serving, the starting point is our own relationship with Christ. And I think, yeah, you need, if you're getting jaded and tired of serving, often the key is to go back to your own walk with Christ. And there are times to step out, there are times to have a break, there are times when we're too tired. We need a bit of a sabbatical, not just the ministers, but lay people as well. But sometimes it's just a matter of going back and examining our motives in why we're serving. Is it out of a joy in the Lord? If it's not out of a joy in the Lord, then our serving for other people will become a burden and not a joy. So it's going back that the core of our joy is joy in the Lord, which overflows in serving others, which grows our joy as we share with one another. So we need to keep those things in the right order. So it's going back to who you are in Christ, sometimes taking time out to just stop and reflect and work on your own relationship with Christ, or continue serving, but sort of go back and check out your motives as well.
Next question. Paul says that knowing Christ can be broken into three different things. Living in the power of his resurrection, sharing in his suffering, and attaining to the resurrection. Can you share a time where God has brought you through the first two of these, and how has it shaped your own ultra marathon in the faith?
I think the first one, the power of his resurrection, is seen in growth in your life. There's nothing that comes to mind of a particular, you know, spectacular change. It's more the process over time of seeing how I have changed. I've changed in character. I've changed in, you know, dealing with certain sins or weaknesses over time. You know, some of us have a testimony where God turns us around instantly, you know, that he breaks the power of sin in some very spectacular way. For me, I think mostly it's been a more gradual experience. In terms of the weakness in suffering, I think over, you know, we've been overseas serving for over 30 years. There's been a lot of joys in that. There's been some really hard times too when we've questioned what we're doing. One was in particular after the end of our first term, so we did 2 years language study, 2 years student ministry. I was put on a campus where we had 8 students. After 2 years of serving there, we still had 8 students. And so I'd spent 4 years, and that was all I had to show for it, right? And I was really depressed, just depressed at sort of, you know, all this work and effort, bringing the family to another country, not really seeing any fruit, you know, just discouraged as we were heading back to Australia for a home assignment. And I think it was that experience. I was encouraged by an older Christian leader to see the long-term perspective and to keep persevering, that if this is where God had put us, to stick it out, not to let, you know, sort of the lack of fruit or the discouragement stop us. And so we went back, you know, after our home assignment. And I think seeing the persevering in those times of discouragement, rather than using discouragement as a reason to drop out or, you know, stop doing it, then in hindsight, I see those times of weaknesses were really valuable to help me grow and understand Christ, that we continue on even when we don't see the fruit, even when we don't feel like doing it. So I think there's been other times, but that was just really clear for me. That was over 20 years ago now, but I think that was a key thing to push through that with the help of another person, was key to be able to continue on faithfully in ministry.
Thanks very much, Phil. That's it.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for your questions.